was also quite confident that it would have practical applications in medicine. I didn't dream that there was going to be a biotechnology industry with all these startups and the Wall Street involvement in it. I thought it would be incorporated into what the existing drug companies would do and become part of the mainstream of their research. And yes, it would be profitable and enhance what pharmaceuticals could do and so on. I had no idea it would become the entrepreneurial game that it's become, in fact. And it didn't need to if the big firms had been awake on their watch. They would have assimilated it 20 years earlier and not necessitated the neoplasia that we've seen.
Why do you suppose they were asleep?
Well, it's the problem of organized large-scale research and getting so much caught up in the dynamics of what you've been doing that it's hard to make room for anything that's really new and novel. To some extent, it's that your managers are the scientists of 20 years earlier, and it's a little hard for them to wake up to real innovation. Those are the two main factors. There's a little bit of the dynamics of doing research that requires more than a 9-to-5 mentality, and there the incentive systems, what the entrepreneurs can make out of it, does start to play some role. Why should the people in a large organization exert themselves? So the usual problems of bureaucracy can be folded into it, and the entrepreneurs are the counter-bureaucracy. It wouldn't have to be that way, but it takes, I guess, more enlightenment than exists in those ranks to do a better job. You know, they've had their successes as well as failures, but the development of antibiotics, you know, could have, I mean, that's what I had as a paradigm, that this was a major advance in medicine, was taken up by the big firms, and you don't have a lot of entrepreneurial colonization as the way that had happened. So it has worked out differently.
I don't know what your time constraints are.
It's, well, it says a natural ending point sometime soon. It's not too rigid. I've just got a pile of paper at my desk I got to take care of.
Well, this might be a place. We've got you to Cold Spring Harbor, that meeting, and
well, why don't we finish up till I get to Wisconsin?
Okay.
We can do that in the next few minutes.
Okay.
It's actually a fairly short story, because the original discovery that there was such a thing as recombination provoked a set of next-generation questions. What would they be? What are the interacting units? Well, they're cells. You don't get activity from filtrates. You got nowhere trying to get transformation with extracts. It took a long time before E. coli would work that way. Boivin caused a little flurry. He talked about DNA transformation in E. coli, but that didn't pan out. I guess Bert Davis did what he called a bundling board experiment. He had a filter separating the two cultures, and they communicate nothing through a filter, that in contrast to what you get with viral transduction, which came up a couple of years later on. Adding deoxyribonuclease to the medium does not interfere with the process of genetic recombination. So presumption is DNA is being exchanged, but in a way that's protected from the external medium, requires intact cells. Two, are there mating types? And our first answer was no. Later on, we discovered there were mutants that showed that there could be, but at least our own bank of cultures were promiscuous. Three, how many markers could be involved? Well, an indefinite number. We kept throwing markers into the strains, getting multiple mutants, and showing that you get all the combinations imaginable, but at different frequencies. Okay, can you make a genetic map? And the answer is yes, there are a lot of constraints because of the need to impose selection on the progeny. You don't have an unbiased recovery of all the progeny. You can only get the ones that are already recombined on the markers that you're selecting on. With that constraint map, and it seemed to work out pretty well. Up to a certain point it did. It's consistent with what we got later on. So those are the main findings for that year. The first linkage maps and the range of markers, and then getting some excitement about what might now be done with genetic analysis of those very markers. So I glommed on to lactose very early. I thought it would be a very good paradigm for a gene-controlled enzyme. Now we can do detailed genetics with it. It's worked out that way. Sort of use E. coli the way one had done before with Neurospora. Write up those papers, use them for my doctoral dissertation, spend a summer at Woods Hole doing it and reading all of the antiquarian literature. I'd seen some of it before then, mostly by DuBose, and getting a good sense of what the history of the subject was at the same time. I've written a little bit about that. I don't know if you've seen that. The last issue of ASM News had a little paper on that. I'll dig that out for you.
We just got... I don't think so.
I'll get it for you right now.
There's no biographical information. Well, very little. I start out in the first paragraph. This paper has an interesting history because I gave it at the Pasteur Centennial in 88. It was the keynote paper. And they were going to publish it in a book there, but they ran out of money. And they only told me about 6 months ago they weren't going to publish it after all. And I sort of wanted to go someplace to try to figure out where it ought to go. And I think it ended up in just the right place, the news bulletin of the ASM. But they truncated the bibliography, and if they'd looked at the page layout, they would have seen there really was room to add quite a bit more. But they, anyhow, I've had to restore my original full bibliography to it, and there. It reads a little bit awkwardly, but that's because of the history. A few places are awkward. But anyhow, that gives all the sort of prehistory of that subject. Okay, it was really quite late that summer that the question of Madison came up.
Excuse me, Joe Husbands, should it be on CSAC letterhead?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I remember it was really late in August. I actually made my first trip to the university, my first airplane ride.
Well, you hadn't really traveled that much up to that point, had you?
Well, New York to New Haven. Well, Israel, I was a kid. that worked out, so really quite hastily changed our plans, and I'd gotten married meantime. That we okay?
Yes, I think that's a good point to break. One of the things that thank you again for spending.